Good day, everybody out there. This is the podcast Then and Now, episode number 9 of season 2. I'm your host, John Chomo. This week, we will look, as we usually do, at the events and historical happenings from the week of April 23rd through the 29th. We'll have a couple of shout-outs based on our recent trip to the city with big shoulders, Chicago, Illinois. And we'll talk about some topics, timely topics going on here, our trip to Wrigley Field among them. And then we'll finish with the answers to last week's three good questions that we got. If you have a question that you want to ask and have aired on the podcast, get in touch with us at threegoodquestions@gmail.com. That's three spelled out, T-H-R-E-E, goodquestions@gmail.com. Okay, let's start with the events of the 23rd of April, April 23rd. William Shakespeare, born on April 23rd, 1564, died on April 23rd, 1616. That kind of stinks, doesn't it? He died on his birthday. Henry Aaron, the great Henry Aaron, hit his first Major League Baseball home run for the Milwaukee Braves on April 23rd, 1954. He would hit 754 more before he retired after the 1976 season. Birthdays on April 23rd, aside from Shakespeare. Warren Spahn, speaking of the Milwaukee Braves, the Hall of Famer, left-handed pitcher, spent most of his career with the Braves. Warren Spahn, born April 23rd, 1921, a veteran of D-Day, by the way. Roy Orbison, the tremendous voice, the tremendously unique voice of the early days of rock and roll. He was really a pioneer. Just you heard it, you knew it was Roy Orbison. Roy Orbison, born on April 23rd, 1936. Akron native, a friend of the family, Melina Kanakarides, the actress, will be 58. And actor Dev Patel will be 35 on April 23rd. April 24th, in 1898, Spain declared war on the United States. That was a couple of months after the USS Maine exploded in Havana Harbor. The first game in the new American League of Professional Baseball Clubs was played on April 24th, 1901. The Chicago White Sox defeated Cleveland, and I forget what Cleveland's nickname was right now. They went through quite a few of them before they settled on Indians around the 19-teens. Chicago White Sox 8 and Cleveland 2 in the first ever American League Baseball game in 1901. On April 24th, 1980, a rescue mission ordered by President Jimmy Carter to rescue our hostages that were being held in Tehran, Iran, failed. There was a sandstorm in the desert, which was their rendezvous point. Three of the vehicles collided. Seven or eight American service members lost their lives. It was a mini disaster, to say the least. Birthdays on April 24th. Barbara Streisand turns 83. Kelly Clarkson will turn 43. Speaking again of the Braves, Hall of Fame third baseman Chipper Jones will be 53. Former Cleveland shortstop Omar Vizquel will be 58, and Pittsburgh Penguins defenseman Chris Letang will be 42. April 25th, New York became the first state to require license plates on automobiles on April 25th, 1901. Lots of birthdays on April 25th, starting with the inventor of radio, Marconi, born April 25th, 1874. The great Edward R. Murrow, legendary CBS journalist. We need more people like Edward R. Murrow in journalism today. Ed Murrow, born April 25th, 1908. Ella Fitzgerald, speaking of great, born April 25th, 1918. Two actors that shared the screen in the great movie The Godfather, Al Pacino will be 85 and Talia Shire will be 79. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver will be 62 on April 25th. ESPN's Monday Night Football play-by-play man Joe Buck will be 56. And Basketball Hall of Famer from Wake Forest University and the San Antonio Spurs, Tim Duncan, will be 49. Moving to April 26th, English settlers landed at Cape Henry, Virginia on April 26th, 1607. Those are the same folks that went upstream a little bit and founded the colony of Jamestown, the first English settlement in North America. John Wilkes Booth, the assassin of President Abraham Lincoln, was killed near Bowling Green, Virginia, in a farmhouse, a barn really, on April 26, 1865. The officers of the troops looking for him, when they had him cornered, wanted to take him alive, but one of the privates outside got an itchy trigger finger and had a shot at him and took it and killed Booth. So Booth was never put on trial, much like the alleged assassin of President Kennedy, Lee Harvey Oswald. On April 26, 1986, the world's largest nuclear disaster took place at Chernobyl, a nuclear power plant in what is now Ukraine, and then was part of the USSR, the Soviet Union. Birthdays on April 26th include Charles Richter, who invented the Richter scale, how we measure earthquakes. He was born in Hamilton, Ohio, just outside Cincinnati, on April 26, 1900. The great comedian and actress Carol Burnett will be 92 on April 26th. The First Lady, Melania Trump, will be 55. And Aaron Judge, now right fielder of the New York Yankees, will turn 32 on April 26th. Moving to April 27th, the man who shot and seriously wounded President Reagan and three others in Washington, D.C. in 1981, John Hinckley Jr., was found not guilty by reason of insanity in a trial on April 27, 1982. His saga is really something. He started out pretty much full-time incarcerated in a mental facility, was eventually allowed out for lunch once a week, then he was allowed to go home on weekends. He is now completely free and living somewhere in Southern Virginia, last time I checked, which was probably about a year ago. Kind of amazing for a man who shot the President of the United States, but that's what happened. Birthdays on April 27th, Samuel F.B. Morse, inventor of the Morse code, born April 27th, 1791. Ulysses S. Grant, the 18th President of the United States and the first five-star general in U.S. Army history. Grant, born April 27th, 1822 in Ohio, Point Pleasant, Ohio, to be exact. The widow of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the late Coretta Scott King, born April 27, 1927. And World Series MVP in 2023, Texas Rangers shortstop Corey Seager, will be 31. April 28th, Maryland became the seventh state in 1788. The Boston Celtics won their eighth straight NBA championship on April 28, 1966, a seventh game 95-93 win over the Los Angeles Lakers at the Boston Garden. That would be Red Auerbach's last game as the head coach, by the way. Jim Valvano, the head coach of the North Carolina State Wolfpack, who won a national championship in 1983, died of cancer on April 28, 1993. Birthdays on April 28, the fifth president, James Monroe from Virginia, born in 1758. Jay Leno, former host of The Tonight Show, will be 75. Hall of Fame shortstop from Cincinnati, and a Cincinnati native, kid grew up there, played for the Reds, Barry Larkin, will be 61. Two-time major champion, the very enigmatic, let's say, John Daly, will be 59. And Denzel Ward of the Cleveland Browns and the Ohio State Buckeyes and the Nordonia Knights, Denzel Ward, will be 28 on April 28th. Okay, April 29th, the last date we'll do this week, Duke Ellington, the jazz great, born April 29th, 1899. Hall of Fame shortstop Luis Aparicio, White Sox, Orioles, Red Sox, will be 91. He's still around. Two-time major champion Johnny Miller will be 78. Jerry Seinfeld will turn 71 on April 29th. Daniel Day-Lewis, the Academy Award-winning actor, will be 67. Uma Thurman, the actress, will be 55. And winner of this past week's tournament at Hilton Head, two-time major champion Justin Thomas will turn 32. I bet it'll be a happy birthday for him. He hadn't won in about 2.5 years on the PGA Tour. It was great to see JT finally get a win there. Personally, I thought so anyway. So there we are. There are our celebrations and shout-outs and anniversaries and so forth for this week, April 23rd through the 29th. Speaking of shout-outs, I have a couple of more here before we get to our topics. First off, good luck to Marina. She'll be running in the St. Louis Marathon this weekend. Hope everything goes well down there by the Arch. Hi to those at Bueno Days in Chicago. Sorry we didn't get over there this weekend. It was nice to see Kyle and Edo at Cozy Corner on Easter morning having some breakfast. It was good to run into those guys and spend some time with them. So there you go. All right. Now let's go to three very, very different topics for this week, varied to say the least. First of all, Pope Francis passed away Monday morning, as we record this on Tuesday, it was yesterday morning. What comes now? That's the question, and I'm sure a lot of people are wondering what comes now. So I did some research. Here we go. They will have at the Vatican in Vatican City, which is a small independent state, pretty much inside the city of Rome, a voting process. The cardinals from all around the globe will gather in Vatican City. They call it the College of Cardinals, and they will hold what is called a conclave. Now, that there was a movie called Conclave out just last year, which depicted this process. I'm not sure 100% accurately, but probably they got it pretty close. I have not seen the film. Might be good viewing right now. Okay, so the cardinals from all over the world, the Catholic cardinals, will convene in Vatican City at the Sistine Chapel. They will meet. They will not be allowed to view television, view their phones, computers, or newspapers during the conclave. They will cast ballots as many as four times in a day if it's necessary, for which one of them they will vote from among themselves. The next pope will be one of those cardinals, and that person will be sitting in the room probably when the votes are counted. So they'll vote as many as four times the first day for which of them will be the next pope. You need a two-thirds majority to be elected. So two-thirds of the College of Cardinals has to elect you to be the pope. After each vote, the ballots are burned. And the whole deal for people watching outside or people viewing on television, they will watch the chimney of the Sistine Chapel. If black smoke is coming from the chimney, that indicates no one got a two-thirds margin on the latest vote. When white smoke comes up from the chimney at the Sistine Chapel, that will signify that there is a new pope that has been elected. And that person will, not too long after that, appear on the balcony there in Vatican City, and will know then who the new pope will be. After 3 days of all of that, if no one has been chosen yet, they will take a day off to reflect before the next round of voting. And then they'll keep voting as many as four times a day. I got that information from the Good Morning America site, by the way. That's my source. So, I've watched that happen a couple times over the years, not terribly in detail. So I did have to do some research there. But that's what we will see starting very shortly, probably. The conclave meeting in Vatican City. As soon as all of those cardinals can get there and do it, they will go through their College of Cardinals voting process. So that's issue number one this week, and we'll see what happens. By this time next week, there will probably be a new pope. Second issue this week, the Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, really has stepped in it again, I do believe. I think that's fair to say. Let's recap Pete Hegseth's wrongdoings here lately. Chosen as Secretary of Defense by President-elect Trump in late fall, he was confirmed in the Senate by a 50-50 vote. Vice President J.D. Vance had to cast the tie-breaking vote to get him in office as the Secretary of Defense. He has now twice, at least that we know of, talked about secret, totally top secret military operations that had yet to take place on a communication system that personally I'm not familiar with, but it's called Signal. And so I've looked it up and read about it. Current news reports, Britannica, etc. Those are my sources. On a Signal group chat, he apparently shared details of a military operation in Yemen 12 hours before it happened on a Signal app. This is a non-secure, again, messaging app. This was reported and verified, by the way, by The Atlantic magazine. Now, as of yesterday, it appears that it had happened again. He shared the attack plans in another Signal chat, which included his wife, his brother, and his personal attorney, among many others. Let's be very clear here. None of those people had clearance to find out that information. The information was details of a military operation that puts American troops in harm's way, leaked out before the military operation takes place. That is, it should go without saying that that's absolutely dangerous and could affect and cost lives of our brave men and women in service. So I don't, you know, I try to really figure out how serious this is. It's really serious. What was Pete Hegseth's military background, by the way? He served in the Army National Guard. He won 2 Bronze Stars for service in Iraq and Afghanistan. 2003 Princeton graduate, by the way. He joined Fox News in 2015. And what he's been doing for the past 7-plus years is he was the co-host of the Fox and Friends weekend broadcast, which I am not a viewer of. Nobody that knows me would be surprised by that. That was his job for 8 years before being named the head of the American military at the Pentagon. It's a confusing choice, to say the least, but that's the choice that President Trump made, and the Senate confirmed him, barely, but they confirmed him. But now this second report of him sharing secret information prior to an attack on a non-secure group chat, many people, even some people in Trump's orbit, are now calling for him to be let go and relieved of his duty as the Secretary of Defense. As of this recording, that has not happened yet. We'll see if President Trump is going to do that or not. But like I said, there are even people in his inner circle now who would like to see Pete Hegseth gone at the Pentagon. And I can't say that I blame him personally. That stuff is just way too dangerous, and nobody should be sharing secrets like that on a non-secure chat. That's just unconscionable, in my opinion. Okay, getting to number 3 here, and this is the fun part, the third topic this year. I finally got to see a baseball game at Wrigley Field in Chicago this past Saturday. The Cubs defeated the Arizona Diamondbacks that day 6-2. My view is this. You know, I've not been a Cubs fan. I'm a Pirates fan. They've always played in the Pirates division in the National League. They don't celebrate them winning anything or anything like that. They beat Cleveland to win their only world championship since 1908. Didn't like that. But boy, if you're a baseball fan, you got to go if you get a chance, I'd say. Any real baseball fan should experience a day at Wrigley Field. Inside the ballpark, if you're not seated behind a pole, and remember this ballpark was built right about the beginning of World War I, if you're not sitting behind a pole, and we were not, we had a good seat, it's a great spectacle there. The fans are really knowledgeable about the game, by and large. Some were drinking a few too many beers, but most are really knowledgeable about what's going on the field. They're involved in the action. They're paying attention. If you go there and think you're going to drive up and get a parking place near Wrigley Field, forget about it, as they'd say in New York. Parking at the ballpark is non-existent. We parked on Addison, a little more than a mile away, west of Wrigley Field, and walked right up Addison to and from Wrigley before and after the game. As you get closer to the corner of Clark and Addison, where home plate is, parking gets in very small lots, they're really behind apartment buildings and things like that. Parking gets really more expensive. About a mile, a little more inside of a mile from the ballpark, it was $20 if you went in one of these places. As you got closer and closer and closer, it went up eventually to about $80, depending on how close you got to the ballpark. The concourse underneath the stands is really woefully narrow. They can't help it. It's a function of how the ballpark was built way back when. It's very nice. It's clean. They have a lot of concession varieties. That's all been done very well. It's just really not friendly confines. It's really tight confines down in there, I'd say. The seventh inning stretch, which is a must. You got to at least stay for the seventh inning stretch if you go to a game there. They often have a celebrity or somebody, you know, lead the crowd in the traditional seventh inning stretch. That was started by the broadcaster, the late, great Harry Carey, when he did Cub games back in the 80s and 90s. And when we were there, I thought we were lucky. Instead of having somebody there doing it from the booth, they had Harry Carey himself, the late, great, lead the seventh inning stretch on the big message board in left field. That was awesome, I thought. It really nobody should do that besides Harry Carey. And that was really terrific. I thought that was great. We left before the game ended because I didn't really want to have to listen to Go Cubs Go after the Cubs won the game. My inner Pirate fan could not deal with that. We left before the game was over. The Cubs seemed to have it well in hand, and they did. They won 6-3, walked back to the car, and went back to the apartment. It was really a great experience. And again, if you get a chance, if you're a baseball fan at all, get to a game at Wrigley Field. Those of you who have been already, and I'm sure you know what we're talking about here. It's a must for a real baseball fan. Let's move now to our Three Good Questions segment. We're going to answer three good questions from last week. Again, if you have a question, we're going to run out after these three, so let's have it. Please send us a question at threegoodquestions@gmail.com, T-H-R-E-E, goodquestions@gmail.com. We appreciate hearing from you. Here's the answer to Josh Bennett's question from last week. He asked for our list, your list, anybody's list, of their three favorite Cleveland baseball players since 1994. In other words, since then Jacobs Field, now Progressive Field, was built. My top three are two of his three. I picked Jim Thome, Jose Ramirez, and I picked Manny Ramirez. Manny Ramirez drove in 165 runs one year for Cleveland in the 90s. Saw him play as a double-A player down in Canton at Thurman Munson Stadium before he made the major leagues. He's unique. He's, you know, not the greatest cerebral thinker at bat. He's not Ted Williams. But for a while there, at least in his Cleveland days, I have never seen a more effective right-handed hitter in terms of hitting for power and hitting the ball all over the place. A character, to be sure. Pretty lackadaisical in the field, to be sure. But he was fun to watch. So I'll go with Thome, Jose, and Manny Ramirez. Okay, second one. The three number one overall NFL picks. The NFL draft is, as we record, just 2 days away. The three number one overall picks from Ohio State were the three following players. In 1979, Tom Cousineau, the linebacker, was picked number one by the Buffalo Bills. In 1994, Big Daddy Dan Wilkinson, the lineman, was picked by the Cincinnati Bengals. And 3 years later, the Hall of Famer, Orlando Pace, the Pancake Man, was picked in 1997 by the St. Louis Rams. He's an NFL Hall of Famer now, as well as a College Football Hall of Famer. So those were the three Ohio State players who were picked number one in the entire NFL draft. That will not happen this week. They wonder, the speculation is Ohio State may or may not have a player picked in the first round, but they will have as many as 14 or 15 players picked in the entire draft. Remember, a lot of those Ohio State guys stuck around an extra year to try to accomplish what they wound up accomplishing, which was winning a national championship. So a lot of them are going to be leaving and joining National Football League teams this weekend. The draft, by the way, is in Lambeau Field, Green Bay, Wisconsin. Quite a setting for the NFL draft this week. The third question was from Jeff Cole also. Originally, what was the only product Amazon sold? The answer to that question is books. They were originally an online bookseller. Now they sell really anything, anything and everything, it seems. So there we go. There are our answers to our three good questions for last week. Please send one in if you have one, threegoodquestions@gmail.com. That ought to wrap it up for another edition of Then and Now. Hope you have a great week, everybody. There's a lot going on. I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about on next week's episode of Then and Now. I'm your host, John Shomo. Take care. You can hit us up on Spotify. You can just find it, type in Then and Now or type in Shomo, and you'll find it there. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week.